Now, it's time for the Cybersecurity News Bite with Jim Guckin.
Cybersecurity News Bite, episode number 79 for February 5th, 2024. Cloudflare gets hacked. Russian hackers use NTLM relay attacks. Critical vulnerability in Mastodon. And any desk breached? Probably reset your passwords. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. I am your incompetent host, Jim Guckin, with another cybersecurity news stories that I think you need to be paying attention to this week from last week. Anyway, big story to start out with, kind of one that I admit is kind of shocking. Cloudflare was hacked. Cloudflare, the organization that most of us pay to protect our websites, got hacked. And don't worry, no customer data was lost in this one. It was all their internal systems. So on February 1st, they revealed that a threat actor had accessed their systems. They discovered it back in November of 2023, actually on November 23rd, 2023. And from the timeline they have now, that was 9 days after the threat actor got access to their systems back on November 14th. So 14th, they were hacked. They found out on the 23rd. They let us know on the 1st. And they're saying that the credentials that were used from the October 23rd, 2023 Okta hack. That hack where they got access to all these Okta accounts, and Okta was saying, hey, you probably need to reset everything. Well, like most companies, we should feel good because Cloudflare didn't reset everything. In fact, from that initial breach, there was a access token and 3 service accounts that were impacted during the Okta breach that were used in this Cloudflare breach. Now, the things that were accessed by these malicious actors was an internal wiki that they had, I guess, to store information for knowledge base purposes, a bug database where they tracked all the bugs that was in the software they had, their AWS environment, I'm sure there was nothing of importance up there, and their Jira and Confluence things that they had in their network. Once again, nothing really huge on their end. I mean, once again, I'm going to put it this way. At least there was no customer data that was impacted. It was all just their own internal stuff. So there were 36 Jira tickets that were accessed. Hopefully they did something to fix some of those tickets. But I'm assuming more they were looking for information. And 202 wiki pages were accessed. Information about like remote access, secret, client secret, Open Connect, Cloudflare, and Token. I mean, those are things that I'm sure had plenty of boring documentation over, didn't actually have what they were looking for. Now, there were 120 code repositories were looked at, but only 76 of them were downloaded. And these are more of the infrastructure part of what Cloudflare does. So how backups work, how their global network is configured, how it's managed, how identity works in Cloudflare, how to do remote access, information about Terraform and Kubernetes in their systems, and a small number of the repositories were luckily encrypted. They had their own encryption in place, so even if they got them, there's no way to read them. The keys for these encrypted items were rotated immediately, and Cloudflare's like, hey, look, in the first place, they were very strongly encrypted, so nothing really to worry about. So let's see how this attack happened. So back on November 14th, they got access to the system. They kind of, I guess, played around for 2 days to figure out what was going on. And on November 16th, the attackers created a Jira account for themselves. Now they came back on the 20th of November to make sure they still had access. On November 22nd, they installed the Silver Adversary Emulation Framework. This is the framework in which helps them gain a level of persistence in the systems. And their hope was to use that to kind of pivot and move laterally across their network. Now, as I said, This is the 22nd of November, and they were discovered on the 23rd. So obviously they didn't get too far into pivoting their attack. And we talk about here, you know, what was successful in attack, how were defenses here. But I will say, this time I want to focus on some of the good things I read in Cloudflare's response. Network segmentation is what saved Okta. So even though the attackers got access to the network, they couldn't get access to everything. This kept the attackers out of their Okta, Cloudflare's Okta environment, as well as some of their major dashboards that have lots of sensitive information. From the incident response standpoint, 35 minutes after the unauthorized access was dealt with, identified. It took 35 minutes from first alert to true identification. That's pretty quick in a incident. Now, I should say, the caveat being, they were in the system for a while before that, but it all depends on what they're doing. Now, the persistence account, the account that they created in the Jira system to continue to gain access to the system, was found and deactivated 40 minutes after the thing was identified. Once again, really quick. Another big thing that they did was Cloudflare went and quickly rotated every password they could. About 5,000 individual production credentials were rotated after the bad actors were ensured to be out of their system. And there was some original talks about the Sao Paulo data center being accessed. And although it was not accessed, there were some hardware there. They were sent back to the manufacturer. They were inspected and replaced, even though there was no evidence of compromise. This goes to show, like, you know, they took the ball and they ran with it. In an incident scenario, you want to make sure that you kind of deal with things with an abundance of caution. And you take a couple extra steps that you'll find out in the long run probably aren't necessary. Now, you'll take a lot of steps that are necessary, don't get me wrong. But there are some that you will make in that moment when you have to make the call to shut a server down, to lock something off, that will cause an impact to your organization, whether it's people can't access their email or can't access remote desktop, whatever it is. You make that call to be overly cautious. And that's the way you have to be in these kind of incidents. There's no other choice. If you him and haul, if you delay, if you're afraid to pull that trigger, the attacker's not going to hesitate. They will do whatever they can to stay in the system and do whatever damage they're going to do. So usually I focus on the bad side of this, but for once I want to focus on what Cloudflare did right. As I said, the attacker was in the system for probably longer than we want, but we don't know what they were doing in the system. Were they in there all the day? Was it all the time? Was it just two or three different probing entries into their network, which may not have set off alerts? Especially with a big company, it's hard to track where all your employees should come from. You know, it was easier back in the day. Back in my day, we all lived close to the office. Yeah, that was easier. But if you're in a big company, people are logging in from everywhere. You may have offices everywhere. You may have people who are on vacation, and you have to track those. So it's a lot harder than, you know, the day of, you know, if it's not coming from a group of US IPs, then you can block it. Even with a VPN, most people can get around that. So kudos to Cloudflare, and hopefully we see, you know, more information come out about this. But like I say, an incident response, sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. For our second story this week, we're talking about Fancy Bear. And Fancy Bear is not a name that is familiar with you. It's a Russian state-sponsored, rumored to be operated by Russia's GRU military intelligence service. Very famous for spear phishing campaigns with malicious attachments. Now, once again, if Fancy Bear isn't a name that you recognize, it may be one of the other 42 names that us in the security world give these groups for some reason. You know, you don't want to stay with one group. You want to have a whole bunch of different names just for fun. I always make this joke, and then I wish someone would just everyone agree on one name, one rather than, you know, Fancy Bear is also known as APT-28, Blue Athena, Blue Delta, Fancy Bear, Fighting Usura, or Fighting Ursa, Forest Blizzard, formerly Stronium, Frozen Lake, Iron Twilight, ITG-05, Pollen Storm, Sednet, Sophocy, and TA-422. Yeah, and this is the problem when you're trying to do some research on attackers. You have to know all the names so that you can kind of combine things together, because these are names not picked by the groups. They will, sometimes they are, sometimes they're not, depending on if they use software and stuff like that. But usually these are names, like, no group calls themselves APT-28 or TA-422. Some have total different names internally, but this group, as I said, is tied to Russia. They've been around since 2009. And the reason I mentioned this attack is, one, it just happened to be in the news after we had talked last week on a show about, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, a very recent show, we have talked about the use of NTLM relay attacks, in which, I believe in the last story, there was some malicious software that was calling for it and then sending it out to the internet, and then people were able to use it going in. Well, these are the kind of attacks right now that Fancy Bear is using. They are kind of taking that encryption and relaying that stuff to a server to say, hey, I am you. Rather than having to steal the password or decrack it, any of that stuff, they're able just to kind of copy the handshake, the this is me thing, the cookies, whatever you want to call them, whatever you're familiar with. I don't know what you call them, because they are called NTLM hashes. They're impersonating you to get in. Now, right now they are attacking targets of foreign energy. Foreign affairs, energy, defense, and transportation. And if they can, they hit, you know, people who are involved with labor, social welfare, finance, parenthood, and local city councils. You know, a really mixed bag of targets for them. But right now, the reason I'm talking about them is they are using two different vulnerabilities that should have been patched. These were back in December. The Microsoft Outlook vulnerability, CVE 2023-23397, with a CVSS score of 9.8 out of 10. Really bad. And WinRAR has a CVE 2023-38831 with a CVSS score of 7.8 out of 10. Once again, in the bad area. And both of these allow a user's NTLM hash to be intercepted. And they relay that NTLM hash to servers to authenticate as you, and they gain unauthorized access to your mailbox. And this is where, as I said, they are phishers. This is where they're strong at. They take that and they pivot to, you know, other mailboxes and get more rights and more settings and more information. This is what they do. So it shouldn't be a surprise to you that this is the kind of, you know, attack that they are good at. And as I say, you know, because they are Russian, we have seen them pretty heavily hit Ukrainian entities back as early as April 2022. Now, some of their new tactics they're currently using are the same as most phishing masters. They're using real life things to kind of drag you in and understand what you're more likely to click. So they have been using information around the Israeli Palestine war. I'm sure there's both, where they're pro Israel and pro Palestine. Doesn't really matter what they are, because they want you to click the link. That's the main purpose of what they do. They have a custom backdoor into your system called Headlace. This gets them access to your computer remotely without having to do anything. They've also been kind of known to use some different remote tools like OceanMap, MazePie, and SteelHook. And one of the things they do to kind of get around detection system is they use some anonymizing layers like VPN services, Tor, data center IP addresses, and the weirdest one, they compromise Edge OS routers so that they can bounce their traffic through there so that it doesn't necessarily look as bad. And the reason I think that's funny is because they're going all out of this way to mask their traffic. And that's why I said there used to be a thing where you're just like, look, I'm going to block everything from outside the U.S. if you're a business in the U.S. or outside of Ireland if you're a business in Ireland or outside of Germany if you're anything in Germany. And that is the way to protect yourself, but not anymore because they have these different services like Tor, like a VPN, like a data center. There are data centers all the world who are willing to do this. And they're able to kind of pivot that to cause problems. Now, once they access your environment, then they're going to make lateral moves across and really embed themselves in that kind of thing. So very dangerous, though. Luckily, right now, a lot of their attacks kind of hinge off of one site called webhook.site, S-I-T-E. So you might want to just proactively block that one just to be on the safe side. That way, if you do get hit with a phishing email of that particular type, you can kind of wedge it away and try to do your best to stay safe. For our third story this week, which is a very interesting one, it's about Mastodon. There was a big exodus from Twitter when Elon Musk took over. And there were a whole bunch of different competitors. There was Threads, there was Blue Sky, there was Truth Social, there was tons of them. You could go anywhere. And in the end, not many of them survived. But Mastodon still has a pretty rigid following. And part of the reason why is because it's a decentralized model, meaning that unlike Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, there's not a centralized place for your data. In fact, it's spread amongst a whole bunch of different servers, and those servers talk to themselves. So if you haven't gotten the Mastodon yet, you have your username, and then it's at, and then the server you're on. So I think, depending on what your interests are, you can kind of group with people you know. So I think I'm on one for, I think they have like Jim Duncan at infosec.exchange or something like that. It's been a while since I've logged onto mine, I will admit it. But if you're not part of that one, you're part of, fuzzybears.org. You can still interact and see my stuff and like stuff. It's very decentralized, but it just goes through a whole bunch of different servers that are owned independently. And they all have their own different administrators. Some of them have their own different rules. But it's a kind of a utopia of, you find what you like. Which is great. Until you have a critical vulnerability. And then you're relying upon all these independently owned operators to administer their systems and make sure that this is patched immediately. I want to hope that most administrators out there are serious about patching. But I've worked in the real world and not everyone is rushing to patch things as they come out. But this vulnerability right now that's tracked as CVE-2024-23832, which has a CVSS score of 9.4 out of 10, really bad, allows an attacker to take over Mastodon accounts remotely. So Mastodon right now is giving very little details about this. They're allowing admins to patch before they say anything because the attacker may figure out how to do this, which tells you it's a really easy thing to do. But they're going to publish more information about this on the 15th. And I like this idea. They're saying, hey, here's a patch. You need to patch quickly. We're going to hold the information about because if we said something, it would become a problem for a lot of people. And in fact, their exact quote is, any amount of detail would make it very easy to come up with an exploit. Meaning this is so glaringly obvious that for the safety of everyone and the privacy of everyone, they are willing to hold back and kind of get a little bit of egg on their face for it. And I am totally for it. Because not only to say, look, there's a problem, they're saying, yeah, there's a problem, but we're willing to tell you what it is just after some time to figure out how to fix it. What they have said is due to an insufficient origin validation in Mastodon, meaning I guess wherever the code comes from doesn't verify who it's coming from, the attackers can impersonate and take over any remote account. That's the problem. And this comes from their from Eugene Rocco, who's the CEO and lead developer of Mastodon, which is a very interesting combination of titles. Because usually you're CEO or you develop, and very rarely do you do both. But as I said, there we don't have much about this right now. But 9.4 out of 10 means that this is something very serious. I'm guessing it's something so easy to do that not patching this is going to create problems. And I guarantee you that once the 15th is passed, we'll say probably by the end of the month, I'll give it that. So by the 1st of March, someone's going to figure out this and figure out a server out there that does not have the patch. And that'll create problems. So I would take the heed of warning from the CEO/lead developer for Mastodon and find out if your version's impacted. So if you have versions prior to 3.5.17, it's vulnerable. If you have 4.0.x version prior to 4.0.13, 4.1 version prior to 4.1.13, and versions prior to 4.2.5, those are the impacted versions. Make sure you do updates, because otherwise it's not going to be pretty when we all of a sudden have problems accessing Mastodon for those who use it. And it's gained popularity. It's nowhere near as popular as Twitter. But, you know, some people really like it. Some people there. I've started to see Mastodon popping up on websites. I tried, like 5 or 6 different ones simultaneously. And some of them have features that are great, but none of them are a true replacement for Twitter, because that's where the audience is. And yes, Twitter's not doing as well, and some of these others have you know, kind of sprung up and taken that place. But until one solidifies as, you know, the one, I think we're all going to have a little problem doing stuff. So if you have a Mastodon server, please make sure that you patch as quick as possible to avoid any further problems. And they're not going to be good problems. For our final story tonight, which, you know, I can see from my little icon here, is kind of right in my chair. Any desk. I'm joking. For those of you in the audio, can't hear it. I have tried to start putting like little logos of companies above my shoulder to kind of talk about these stories. So AnyDesk, which is a remote access software, which is used by a lot of different people, and we've talked about the dangers of remote access. Well, AnyDesk themselves had a security incident. On February 2nd, they suffered a recent cyber attack. The attackers gained access to the company's production systems. Now, AnyDesk says that they only got access to source code, and some private code signing keys were stolen. They did the best thing, which was, you know, bring in a third party. In this case, it was CrowdStrike. There was no ransomware found. It was not involved in the thing. So that was great on their part. So it looks like the whole idea was to go in and steal codes and keys. The AnyDesk company wants you to know that if you had an end user device, that those were not affected. But the interesting thing was, even though they came out February 2nd, it says that they haven't said when the breach actually occurred. Now, my best guess from kind of researching the internet found that there was a 4-day outage starting on January 29th. And this outage caused the AnyDesk people to disable the ability to log into AnyDesk line. I'm going to make the assumption, and it's not out now, this is totally my assumption, that's probably the best time when they would have been in full panic mode from the incident. You figure, you know, the 29th, pull a calendar up here so I don't do it. So 29th, 30, 31, and 1st, And then all of a sudden, the second they come out and go, look, yeah, we were breached. That makes plenty of sense to me. You know, understand the situation, take control of it, and move quickly. So I'm going to guess last Monday they were breached. But that's, as I said, they haven't confirmed it yet. That's kind of speculation on my part, but it would kind of line up to what you would expect. Now, AnyDesk, like everyone else, has been doing good. They revoked all security-related certificates and generated new ones. This way that if any of that stuff was stolen, they can't be reused because they're no longer valid in the system. If you use certificates inside your system, this is a very typical thing that you would do for an incident. You invalidate the ones that you're definitely sure were compromised, but maybe you go a little hog wild and rip every certificate out and reassign a new one. That way, if it's stolen, it'll no longer work in your system. They went through, they remediated or replaced systems that were impacted by the hackers, because sometimes you don't know what they did or didn't do, unless you have really like deep forensics tools. So, you know, I can't blame them for this as something that, you know, you, like we talked earlier, abundance of caution that you do. Now, they also said that there were no authentication tokens stolen, meaning that these are things that they're used to being able to log in. So none of them were stolen. And why they didn't see anything else otherwise? I don't even know. It's a word. They didn't see anything else. They decided to revoke all passwords to their web portal, meaning you'll have to reset them when you log in. And they're suggesting that you change any password that you have associated with their stuff. Once again, you know, and I'm going to say this. People are going to go, well, you know, they didn't see anything, so why should I have to do that? Remember, look above, or the first story, Okta. Okta is the whole reason was they did not rotate passwords when they were told to. And why they may not see at this early stage of the investigation any access, you never know if they did or didn't. So if you have any desk, I highly recommend you change the password. Do not think that it is unimportant. I mean, you should be changing passwords with fairly regular cadence during the year anyway. Every, you know, depending on what your company is, every 30, 60, 90 days, 120 days, whatever you decide as an organization is best for you. But during any breach of any system, whether it impacts users or not, I am always going to recommend that you take that time to remediate and reset your passwords. Because at worst, it does nothing. And at best, it saves someone from accessing your account. And that could be the dangerous thing that you don't want to have to say. Well, like, well, yeah, we knew AnyDesk had a problem, but we didn't know. You know, they said it didn't have our access to our systems. You got to remember, if you've never been in a cyber incident or security incident, there's a lot of things that move very quickly, very quickly. And you don't necessarily understand a lot of things at the beginning. You're gathering a lot of information. You have a lot of fragmented pieces. You're trying to piece it all together. And, you know, as time goes on, as your third party comes and engages, as your team goes through it, you start to understand that, you know, what really happened. They did this. Now, I want to say at this point, a week later, you want to hope they have all the information. But they may or may not, depending on how far they're going and forensic analyzing their systems. But once again, I would recommend that you avoid the mistakes of Cloudflare and you reset your passwords just to be on the safe side. It doesn't hurt anything. I know it's a pain in the butt. It's always a pain in the butt when we reset passwords. But it's to make sure that you are safe and that no one can access your accounts by any means. I mean, there are tons of passwords floating around the internet. It is a very dangerous place. So, after a breach, always make sure you change your passwords just to make sure that you yourself are protected. Thanks so much for listening to the show. Once again, I am Jim Guck, and you can find more information about me at my website, jimguckin.com. We can see, kind of learn about me. If you want to email me and talk with me, I'm always open to talk to anyone. In fact, I as you can tell, I kind of like talking. So I'm willing to chat with anyone. You can always email me at my email address, me@jimguckin.com. If you want to know more about this show, Cybersecurity News Bite, go to our website, cybersecuritynewsbite.com. You can find all of our past episodes as well as the show notes, in which I right to kind of do the show. So you can see the websites I got the information from, as well as kind of my notes that I used to take from a high level to kind of explain these stories, see if you want to learn about them. So once again, you can do that at cybersecuritynewsbyte.com. Please make sure you stay safe online, and we'll talk again next week.
You've been listening to the Cybersecurity News Bite with Jim Guckin. Learn more about our show at cybersecuritynewsbyte.com.